From the University of Central Florida's Center for Distributed Learning, I'm Kelvin Thompson.
And I'm Tom Cavanaugh.
And you're listening to TopCast, the Teaching Online podcast. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Kelvin. Here we are again.
Here we are again.
In the box. Recording.
Will they let us out if we get it right this time?
Let's hope.
Yeah.
Let's hope.
There you go.
At least throw some food under the door.
Some peanuts. I don't know. Something. Yes.
So.
Yes.
Let's waste no time.
No time wasting.
Let's get right down to it.
Down to it.
What is in the thermos?
Well, you got to have your priorities, right?
That's right.
No thermos today.
Then what's in the pockets?
Yes. I need to have some, I should get some pants like that, right? With a straw and some non-leak pockets, because when you pour the coffee straight in there, it just is a mess and people look at you funny wherever you go.
I am going to make no comment.
You were wondering before, but that's my disclaimer. Now, well, let me give you this preamble. As you know, there are a lot of variables involved in an excellent cup of coffee, and hopefully I usually bring you an excellent cup of coffee.
Indeed.
Toward the end of the process is the roasting and the brewing, and I usually take care of the brewing part and get some roasting outsourced by a local roaster. But it's kind of rare for the same person who roasted the coffee beans to be the same person who brews your coffee and pours it in your cup, but it does happen. Usually when you're in that kind of situation, we're talking about some kind of attention to detail that produces really high quality results. Hard to figure out exactly where the specifics are there, but when you got that all going on, good stuff usually happens. Now, today's coffee is from that kind of place.
That kind of place.
That kind of place.
So I have a cup in front of me.
Yes, indeed. What's it say on it? Tom's cup.
My hand was over the Lineage Coffee Roasting.
That's right. Lineage Coffee Roasting here in Orlando, where they have a bar, literally a countertop at an artisan market. And so this was roasted and brewed by the same folks. So the particular coffee you're drinking is a Colombia Santa Cruz. How do you like it?
It is good.
Yeah, I like it too. So this roasting and brewing example seemed to me, at least, analogous to the design plus teaching issue, or maybe the design versus teaching issue, within today's topic of determining quality in online courses.
Wow. What are the odds that you had thematically selected coffee?
Well, I keep something in my pocket just in case of emergency. You know?
Yeah. No, it's good. I like it. And I get how it relates to the conversation of quality. Now, this isn't the first time that we've talked about quality.
No, indeed. We did this with Blended Learning elsewhere yeah. in our podcast feed. And we had Blended Learning. Then we had Blended Learning Part 2.
Yes.
You know? So I looked up some possible alternative titles for this episode.
Did you?
Yes.
Do tell.
So being inspired from some of the most interestingly named sequels, we could call this episode Quality 2, T-O-O, like Teen Wolf 2. Quality, The New Batch, from like Gremlins 2, The New Batch. Quality, The Second One, which is inspired by Sharknado.
Yeah.
That's right. Or that one might be the best, but my favorite so far is Honey, I Blew Up the Quality.
Okay.
Or like, Honey, I Blew Up the Kids.
Oh, I got it.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see which one, if any of those, make it into the feed.
I am just old enough to get all of your references.
What are the odds?
Okay.
Yes. So, not the first time. So in the earlier episode, we explored some of the broad issues on market
Magazine Street in New Orleans.
New Orleans.
We were at the OLC Innovate Conference.
That's right.
And that was a bit of an impromptu podcast
yes.
session. So we kind of...
In our defense,
yes. You know, a little disclaimer. We had a bit of a free-ranging conversation about quality.
And that's not always bad. The coffee was certainly good.
It was. It's probably better than the podcast.
But if you haven't listened to that one yet, you might want to give it a listen. I do think, in thinking about that, I think we did tackle from a really high level some big issues in quality. But so you give it a listen if you haven't listened to it. But we didn't, though, get into the details of how we might operationalize quality markers for high-quality online course design and high-quality online teaching. So, hey, how about we do that?
Let's do that. And in fact, that might actually be more useful for people. and if you've listened to the podcast before, you may recall that we've discussed the concept of the iron triangle,
yep, yep.
And that's quality, cost, and access. And you can't necessarily impact any one without impacting the others, yet we feel that through creative application of innovative educational technology, you can potentially impact all three at the same time positively. And uh, we we set that up as kind of a framework for what we would try to talk about this year, occasionally revisiting different elements of that Iron Triangle. And so it's almost like you can't talk about quality too much, you know? It's
right.
It is oftentimes in online learning the elephant in the room where people talk about, you talk about convenience and you talk about all this other stuff, but, you know, is it as good as and all of that? And so, you know, when you talk about operationalizing the application of quality standards in an online course, I think that's a way to answer that question, that elephant in the room of, well, here's how we can.
That was my elephant.
For the record, that was not an app. That was Kelvin. It's a way for us to say, look, this thing we're doing is quality and neutralize objections. And perhaps,
hopefully high quality.
Yeah, maybe in some cases. I am certainly an advocate of this, that online learning can be higher quality than what happens in the classroom in many, many cases when it's done right.
Yeah, I think that's right. And you've alluded to rubrics or checklists, and I don't know, as someone who once upon a time wrote a dissertation on a model to not have reductionist rubric-style evaluations of online course quality, I'll tell you that as much as quality really can't be reduced to checklists or rubrics, people really want checklists and rubrics, and they really are helpful operationally. I mean, just to move forward, you know, you can have these big conversations, but it's like, well, what are you really concretely talking about? That's where the rubber hits the road for people.
Sure. And people want to know, I think, how am I doing? Am I doing this right? Am I doing this well? How can I tell? And in comparing your course design against some sort of objective standard is a way to measure how you're doing.
Yeah. And so I guess let's give maybe some shout outs. I mean, some people, there's some really popular kinds of rubrics and tools that are in this range. What would you say is the number one recognized name in this area?
I got to give my friend Deb props here. Quality Matters is the big gorilla, and rightfully so. They do a fantastic job. I mean, they've got a rubric, but it's also a process.
Yes.
And, you know, people can subscribe to that process. Yep. And, you know, and there are a number of new initiatives that Quality Matters is working on, including looking at MOOCs and some other things. But definitely, that is always the first one off the tongue when people are talking about online course rubrics.
Yes. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, money has to change hands to be a part of that. It's a subscription kind of membership kind of a thing. Can I share a pet peeve? It seems like lately I've been sharing a lot of pet peeves.
What if I said no?
I'd probably share it anyway. You know, so, you know, might as well go with it. I'm amazed by the number of people who say things like, oh, well, no, we don't use Quality Matters, but we you know, we're not a member, but we kind of use Quality Matters in our rubric here at our institution. Now, what they really mean is they took those headings, those big categories out of the rubric and are using that. They're not really using the rubric, and it drives me a little bit batty.
The rubric has been out.
Yes, so, at least a prior version, I think.
Right.
But they're still careful to, you know, okay, don't, this is for like illustrative purposes. Don't be thinking that you're doing Quality Matters if you just kind of, you know, and that's in fairness to them because that's a robust process.
And we have to be careful because we don't want to get into, it's a whole separate subject of, you know, faculty development models.
Yeah.
And Quality Matters is certainly something that can be used in a faculty development process.
Yep.
So, for example, I've been asked by other institutions who are sort of, you know, asking us about how we do things here at UCF. Well, how many courses do you approve for online learning every year? And you know, our model's not like that.
That's right.
We're a production model that's large scale, and it's kind of decentralized with some centralized controls and support. But our courses do not go through some sort of, every course must go through a Quality Matters approval process. So that model doesn't really fit here. But in some cases, it might.
Yeah.
And if you want that kind of vetting process, if maybe you don't have the kind of instructional design and production infrastructure that we have, then that's a great way to ensure quality, to have every course reviewed by a peer committee against a standard.
I like to say that we're front end heavy
in
that sense. We put all that investment in the pre-design and the design process, whereas a lot of institutions, they'll using some kind of a rubric in an institutional way, it'll I don't know that I really call it the back end, but it's down the road a little bit.
Sure, it's formative versus summative, we're more on the formative side. But we also have, you know, extensive buy-in and partnerships with the departments and the faculty themselves
who own
these courses. They're all different models. So before we go any more down the cul-de-sac.
Agreed. So, I mean, would you agree with this that, I certainly hear people saying this, I'm still trying to decide if I agree with this, but would you agree that in some respects, broadly speaking, a course quality rubric is a course quality rubric is a course quality rubric?
Broadly speaking, yeah. You know, the ones that I've seen that I really like, mm-hmm. so Quality Matters is mm-hmm. obviously one of them, which mm-hmm. I admire. I really liked it's been a while since I've seen anything recently because we haven't been working with Blackboard lately, but mm-hmm. the old Blackboard Greenhouse rubric I was a big fan of. I thought it did a really nice job. Chico State, I know that we've referred to some of their materials in the past.
Cal State, Chico, right.
Right, sorry.
Yeah. No, that's all right. Hey, usually it's me.
Yeah. Cal State, Chico.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there are others as well.
Yeah, SUNY's come up with some stuff. Oscar, yep. Open SUNY. Yep. All kinds of good stuff. But maybe it would be helpful to kind of look at some of the things that are typically addressed in those rubrics and maybe just kind of riff on those a little bit, talk about kind of what the nature of good quality is.
Yeah, I think that's worthwhile. Most of these rubrics tend to be, they tend to privilege design elements over delivery elements.
Yep. So, why is that?
Well, it's easier to observe. It's the same thing as with a face-to-face class. Yep. Unless you're sitting there watching somebody teach, you don't know how well they're delivering instruction.
But interestingly, right, we don't seem to privilege design face-to-face in the same way that we do online. I think it's weird, right, because you could go observe face-to-face, and that's just a snapshot at a moment in time. You could do that online as well, although it's a little bit more difficult. But there's so much more material that one could review in advance. Face-to-face, I mean, you've got like a syllabus or whatever, but it's maybe the rare instructor who has like everything sort of in print, that kind of like doing an off-site review for your accrediting group.
Show me evidence.
Level. That's right. Having just recently our institution gone through that.
Yeah. Well, and there's also a lot of faculty really enjoy the performance aspect of mm-hmm. face-to-face instruction, and that's much more improvisational than what you do online.
My whole life's an improvisation, you know?
All right, so you want to lay out some of these categories?
Sure, and these are kind of excerpted. We're doing, as you know, Tom, but for everybody else's benefit, we're doing some work here in the state of Florida to try to get at maybe a statewide set of principles, standards, markers, whatever. And in that case, we have decided to address both design and what some call delivery. Some people take issue with that term, design delivery. Teaching, how about we use that, that term? So here are some, and I think while some specific details could, in different rubrics, could move from one heading to another, I think you get the gist of it when you kind of look at these headings. So how about I just run them down, and then we can kind of talk about anything we want to with those, right? So course overview and content. I mean, kind of having clarity, right? Having organization and providing that kind of big picture and having meaningful content, that's a thing. Interaction design, designing for interaction, which is different than actually having the interaction. Course technology, making that real apparent, clear for the students why they're doing what they're doing, having help with it if they need it. Usability and accessibility. You know, is it, can you find your way around in it? If you have any kind of need for accommodations, you know, does it cause an issue? Instructional design, that we'll call that all of the your objectives aligned with your assessments, aligned with your activities, aligned with your content, and, you know, chunked and all that. And then on the like teaching part, the delivery part, engaged teaching and effective course implementation. Those are some of the headings that our Florida group have used. The heading types change from rubric to rubric, but that kind of stuff. You think that's consistent with what you've seen elsewhere?
Yeah, I think so. And I don't think anybody would argue with those broad categories, especially people who've been doing this a while. The problem, I think, is in the details.
Yeah.
Especially when you have a committee, a statewide committee, and of course this cake is still baking.
Yeah,
this isn't done yet.
That's correct.
But it has the danger of of having people say, yeah, but you need to have, you know, this mm-hmm. requirement. You need mm-hmm. to have four interactions every course, or you need to have, you know,
right.
this kind of proctored test every course, yeah. or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And if you don't have that, then it can't be quality.
Yeah.
It's like, well, some of that is opinion, and some of that is based upon the pedagogical style of the faculty member or yeah. the particular objectives of that course.
Some nuances at that institution.
Exactly. Culture at the institution, or context. And it's hard sometimes for people to step back and have a rubric that's more broadly applicable.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that we're going to end up with that, but I think it has the danger of becoming too detailed.
I agree with that. In fact, that's been our conversation with our statewide group, and something I've said a couple times, and some others have agreed. And hopefully this is where we land. I mean, this is, like you said, a work in progress, still baking. But what I've advocated for is, at a larger group like that, fewer things, more broad. And then your institutional, more detailed, context-specific stuff can find a home. It's like little pigeons coming into land, you know, in their mm-hmm. own little nesting place. And I hope that's where we end up. But you're right, the process, I've been a part of several of these kinds of things, and the process is always way nitty-gritty before it zooms out.
It's the old kitchen sink.
It really is. It'll drive you batty before you're done,
yeah.
For sure.
But I think it as a way to kind of broadly frame these things, I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think so. Now, as we're recording this, we just recently had a little discussion focus session with some faculty here at UCF, and mm-hmm. we kind of posed some questions about quality. Now, we haven't really, actually, you and I haven't really debriefed on this too much, but what
it was literally like day before yesterday.
Yes, right. What were your observations of this? Because to me, that conversation went a little bit different direction than some of these rubric things typically go.
Yeah, I thought it was a really good conversation, and unfortunately, I don't think we had enough time to really explore this. And we had great participation. We filled the room with faculty who were interested in this question. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these are all faculty who are experienced
yes.
online instructors. So these people are really engaged. They
yep.
know what they're doing.
Yep.
And they have really informed opinions. So mm-hmm. I found it a valuable discussion. But I made a few notes about just some broad themes. Now,
mm-hmm.
they used an awful lot of specific examples
yes.
to illustrate these themes.
Yes.
But I think they would all kind of agree with these themes. So the first one was that for quality, a course must have structure and consistency.
Mm-hmm.
And this includes both things like try to have all your assignments due in a consistent way,
right.
like on a certain day or a certain time or something. Because if it's random, you know, it's hard for students, particularly students who take courses online or might be working or whatever, to manage their time. As well as, though, from a content perspective, structure from a scaffolding perspective, you know, having content build upon each other so you don't feel like it's just a random collection of content modules, that there's a design behind
mm-hmm,
this.
Mm-hmm.
And they seem to really feel like the students valued a coherent structure for the course, both mechanically as well as from
mm-hmm.
a content standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of mechanics, and I think this is obvious, but it's probably not a bad thing to say, the course must have clear navigation and usability.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The very last thing you want is to have students enroll in an online class and not know what to do next.
Yeah, right.
I remember having conversations at other places where faculty had kind of a lot of autonomy to design the course the way they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
They could kind of change the location of buttons. They could change the interface colors and mm-hmm. do all kinds of things.
Can they make things blink?
They can make things blink. And they can put red text on a purple background and all kinds of stuff.
And who wouldn't love that?
There was some of that here, and there was some of that at my previous institution. And I've heard stories from other other colleagues from around the country. And, you know, you don't want to tie faculty's hands and not let them express their, knowledge and creativity, and you want to find a good balance. But if you have a course where a student is spending their intellectual, energy trying to figure out what to click instead of learning the content you want them to learn, that's not quality. So that's mm-hmm. navigation and usability. And usability also includes things like universal design.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Instructor presence. So this is more of your delivery / teaching.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If students are emailing a faculty member and it takes them a week to get back to them. Students hate that. And that's a big complaint.
that's not a normal turnaround time?
No. Well, but you know, you hear stories.
You do.
So, and if, you know,
They weren't my students, were they?
No, they're
good.
Not your
students. Okay,
that's good. You would know. So instructor presence, being present for the students, and all of the people that were in the room the other day are the kinds of people that are like getting back to students within like, you know, hours.
Yeah.
They really cared.
Yes.
Being able to create a sense of community online, that was a theme that came up. And whether that's facilitated by the instructor through something like a synchronous session of office hours or test review or whatever, bringing in a guest speaker.
Yeah.
Or it's something that they enable students to do with themselves through some sort of a community building mechanism within the course. Having a community online seemed to be really important.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last theme I wrote down, and again, this was a brief conversation. I'm sure there would be more if we had more time. Was not to waste the students' time.
Yeah.
No busy work.
Right.
Students don't mind spending time in a course if they feel like it's relevant and it's going to help them. And that seemed to be reinforced by a lot of the faculty. And I'll just say from my own personal experience teaching many courses online, every single one of these I completely agree with.
Yeah,
and it's been consistent with my own personal experience.
Now, some of the other things that I think the faculty in that group said that I think is outside the because those things I would say are all consistent with the kind of the rubric-y kind of stuff that we've talked about.
Yeah.
Is that a word? Rubric-y?
Rubric-y.
It's like stripping. But some of the things that are out of the bound of the rubric-y kind of stuff are some of the faculty brought up class size is an issue.
Sure.
You know, design and class size matching. If you've got this kind of thing that was designed for a smaller class size and I got a bigger class size,
Yeah, designing your assessments, if you've got, you know, 10 students versus, you know, 100 students, it's a very different kind of assessment strategy that you can explore.
I was impressed, I think, by the number of faculty in the room who said various things that seemed to boil down to quality really kind of boils down to did the students learn stuff? It was kind of really what they said. You know, I heard things like students achieving the learning outcomes and things like that. But I thought, yeah, that's probably right.
We had a pretty spicy conversation, and it's probably still be going if we could, about this concept of should online courses strive to meet minimum standards or excellence?
Yeah. What do you think about that?
Well, there was a lot of debate about what the heck do you mean by minimum standards? And there was a little bit of how dare you?
I know.
And which I was pleased because the faculty in the room were more like, you know, we're about excellence, not minimum standards. And so you better define what you mean by that.
And I'll tell you what.
It was a provocative question on purpose.
I'm curious what you would say that frames is. But I'll tell you, looking down at a draft of a rubric right now, because it's not a rubric. What we've got in front of, at least I got in front of me, I think you've got in front of you too. I've got like a list of standards. And right now, there's not a rubric that goes with that. There's kind of like the implication is it's binary, right? It's either yes, this exists, or no, this doesn't. And in that sense, I think that leads one down an expectation of minimum. Like, okay, check, good, not check, bad? You know.
Well, yeah, that's you're kind of making my point about the kitchen sink.
Yeah.
The more granular you get and the more detailed sort of you must have this in your course. If you don't have it, does it mean the course is bad?
Right.
Not necessarily.
Right.
It may be that that's not appropriate for this kind of a course. So I fear that if you get below a certain threshold, then it becomes much less useful.
That's right. Whereas a more robust rubric, you know, you've got kind of a high-end watermark and you've got kind of a lower end and you maybe even have an out for not applicable. And I think that's where a reviewer's expertise really comes in. This is where my background in connoisseurship and so forth shows up because so much of it is qualities in the eye of the beholder. And if you're knowledgeable, then you can say some things like, oh, this was not even appropriate. You know, that's not relevant for you. And so we can go talk about this other thing.
But, you know, I do think that there is, as much as the faculty, I think, legitimately pushed back on this concept of minimum standards versus excellence, there probably is something to minimum standards.
I think so.
Now, we would hope that all faculty would strive to exceed minimum standards.
Yes.
But as at least a starting point, especially for faculty who might be brand new to online teaching, it's like, well, here's kind of what we expect all courses to have, these elements. And now let's talk about how do we go beyond that.
So With that in mind, you want to maybe say a word about what we're kicking around here, this quick check idea?
Sure. I'll give credit to Bill Phillips, who we ran down in New Orleans about his chili.
He'll be looking for his commission from this episode.
Well, Dr. Bill had, a terrific idea. He was calling it the Jiffy Lube.
Yes.
You know, trademarks. Yeah, so we're not calling it the Jiffy Lube.
No, we're not.
But the quick check, the course quick check. And the idea is that, you know, you take your online course and you drive it into the shop here and you put it up on the lift and the instructional designer sits next to you.
10-point inspection kind of
thing. 10-point inspection thing, whatever it might be. And you go through the course and you say, well, gosh, yeah, oh, it looks like you got some pictures here without alt tags.
Ooh.
So let's mark that down. And it looks like you got some links that have gone bad over time.
Well,
and
your tires are worn.
Tires, yeah. Let me show you your air filter. And so you can go through literally a 30-minute check of your course and come out with a set of recommendations.
Which is far faster than any time I've done any kind of a more elaborate course review. Even going fast, I think it's taken me usually 3 hours to go through a fully online course.
Yeah. Yeah.
So 30 minutes is pretty good.
We've also got some pretty awesome technology tools that the team here has built, like our Udoit accessibility checker and some other things that can really facilitate that kind of a speedy checkup.
Yes, that's right.
And so the faculty member would walk away with a report of here's some stuff that needs to be worked on. You can do it yourself, or we'll be happy to work with you on it, or even in some cases do things on your behalf. Just let us know. And I think that's something we can do side by side with faculty, or we could even proactively do on behalf of faculty and then send them reports, to try and help them strive for that kind of excellence, because, you know, faculty are busy and they may not realize that a link has gone bad because they haven't taught that course in the semester and they haven't gone in to check it yet. And we can help them out.
Yeah, see, to me, I think that's the beauty of these kinds of tools is if you get dialogue generated, some self-eval, a little peer review, or here's somebody, a professional is going to come alongside you and say, hey, here's some things to consider and we can talk about them, or I can fix them for you, or that's useful.
Sure.
That's really useful. I think it's maybe helpful to make one caveat about blended learning. Much of what we've said here is applicable to blended as well. But actual blended specific rubrics are kind of few and far between. You find them every once in a while.
Yeah.
I'll give it a shout out to, in the BlendKit course materials, we have a blended specific self-eval peer review form, and we'll put that in the show notes. You can look for that. But bottom line is a lot of the stuff's the same, but you at least make allowance for the face-to-face part of a blended course as well, if you're gonna do that. So what's the bottom line, Tom?
What
we have
is
one?
The bottom line? We always have a bottom line.
Yeah.
So,
all right. Coffee's out. That's the bottom line.
Yeah. I can see my grounds now. All right. So you want me to take a crack at
sure,
it?
Sure, take a crack.
So I think when we're talking about quality, we need a common vocabulary so that we can discuss course design and high quality teaching.
Yeah.
Rubrics can be very useful for self or peer evaluation. In fact, that's how we use it in our faculty development course.
Yep.
And perhaps can also assist in institutional quality assurance efforts, kind of like we're talking about with our quick check.
Yeah.
Now, quick check might not necessarily be addressing like creative assessment strategies, like let's do problem-based learning
or something. Right.
But at least we'll open the door and we'll address some of those minimum.
Maybe that 80-20 rule kind of thing.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
Short
period
of time, get most of the stuff and go on from there. No, I think that's good. Good for you.
So that's our bottom line, I guess. Would you agree?
No, I think that's excellent. I guess the only thing I would add to that is, and I don't know if you'd agree with this, but I would say be careful about too heavy a hand on the institutional stuff. You don't want to do quality at teaching faculty, right? You want to have a collaborative collegial process and as much as possible probably, but quality assurance is important.
It is. All right, so I know we said we were going to wrap it up.
But
let's just keep going.
Oh, sure.
Maybe our longest podcast ever.
Ever.
There is a school of thought that that quality is the last step of a particular design and development process.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, that's true. You want a quality review or something. But, if you've built in a culture of quality throughout, then it's not about, okay, we designed the course, now we have to check it for quality.
Right.
It's something that's just built into everything you do. And maybe and maybe that's the way to look at these rubrics.
It
informs everything you do on a formative basis.
Yeah, I think that's excellent, Tom. That's an even better place to leave it than
there
the first time that you said that. So I guess we'll leave it there. And for TopCast, I'm Kelvin.
And I'm Tom.
See ya.